Donna Olympia Maidalchini Pamphili was, in her time, one of the most powerful women in Europe, equally celebrated and despised for the same reasons, perhaps. So significant a figure was she that her portrait was painted by one of the great masters of the era, Diego Velázquez, and that painting itself has been lost for centuries. It'll go on sale tomorrow at Sotheby's in London with a guide price of between £2 million sterling and £3 million sterling. Historian Eleanor Herman has researched the life and legacy of Donna Olympia, and she joins me now from studio in Washington, D.C. Who are we talking about when we talk about Donna Olympia? She's quite a woman, Eleanor.
Indeed, she was. I wrote a book about her, as you know, called Mistress of the Vatican, and many people thought she was, in fact, the mistress of the Pope, Innocent the X. We don't really know if there had ever been a sexual affair between the two, but she certainly was mistress of the Vatican itself and the Papal States, because she ran the show. The Pope was her brother-in-law and had always been an intelligent but highly indecisive individual, and she got a hold of him and told him exactly what to do and helped him up the corporate ladder, so to speak, until he finally won the papal tiara. And then she pretty much ran the Vatican for him, appointed cardinals, made laws, accepted bribes from foreign countries. She was quite a well-known and notorious individual in her time.
And how did, how aware were the other members of the people in the Vatican of just what her power was? I know that the public at the time, weren't there even coins minted and flags with her image on them as the Pope?
Yes, the Papessa, the female Pope. The Italians have a great sense of humor, and they printed papal medals that were collectibles where she was in the papal tiara sitting on St. Peter's throne, and on the reverse side, it was Pope Innocent with curls knitting. they also, whenever his name was on a public building, Pope Innocent, at night they would crawl up and hang banners over it, Pope Olympia the First. So she was well known both in the public and in the upper echelons of the Vatican as running the show. Now, many of the cardinals were not happy with this situation, that she was a woman insinuated, into the halls of power where no women had ever been, and they still aren't 400 years later. She was also more corrupt than any of them. She knew how to squeeze a bribe out of anyone better than all the men, so they were very jealous of her.
I'm wondering who's had the sense of humor when they discovered what happened to the treasures of the Vatican just before Pope Innocent died. Suddenly, a lot of stuff kind of disappeared.
Well, that happened with every pope. It was the tradition, as soon as the pope got very sick, that the servants would steal all the furniture in his bedroom. Sometimes his relatives would come in and find the pope's corpse lying naked on the floor. They had stolen the bed and his nightshirt. But she had the Vatican treasury removed from Castel Sant'Angelo across the street from the Vatican Palace and put under his bed in these huge chests. And every day she would take a few sacks home with her. She was carried home in a sedan chair, and her sedan chair carriers testified later in a trial how much heavier Donna Olympia was when she went home from the Vatican than when they had carried her there in the morning.
She wasn't averse to gathering a little bit of money, because you mentioned that Pope Innocent the X, was he the 10th?
Yes.
Yeah, he was her brother-in-law. So, but this was her second marriage. She, her first marriage got her a fair amount of money.
Yeah, she was the daughter of a tax collector in a town called Viterbo in the Papal States. And her father wanted to cram her into a convent, which she really didn't want to do. And she fought tooth and nail, and she got out of it. And then she ended up marrying, with a very minuscule dowry, the richest young man in town. He was 20. He was handsome. He was crazy for her. So suddenly she was a wealthy matron. And then he died 3 years later, and she inherited all his wealth. So for her second marriage, she wanted to be a noblewoman. She wanted to be Donna or Lady Olympia. So she married a man over 30 years her senior, who was a nobleman in Rome, with a rundown palazzo and a leaky roof. And so, it's the old story. They traded her wealth for his title.
Now, this idea of her being the mistress of the Vatican is one side of things. And you're saying there's no evidence as to whether she actually had any kind of sexual relationship with her brother-in-law, who was Pope Innocent the X. Mm-hmm. Other aspects of her life, might have cast some kind of questions around her as well, particularly her support of prostitutes in Italy at the time.
She was a kind of proto-feminist, and women around Europe loved her, that she had risen from humble beginnings to such a state of power and wealth. And so she looked after nuns who were in what we would call a maximum security prison. They couldn't leave. They couldn't do anything. They were sometimes hungry and cold in the winter. She would deliver them carts full of food and firewood. And she also protected prostitutes who were women who couldn't afford a dowry either, as her father didn't want to pay for hers when she was 15. And so she took them under her protection by putting her family crest over the doors of the whorehouses, if you can imagine, and on the doors of their carriages, so that the authorities would not be able to harass them, because they were under Donna Olympia's protection.
And was it her sisters? Had she two sisters who were, in fact, nuns as well?
Yes, two younger sisters. When she was 15, her younger sisters were 12, 13. Her father, who was too cheap to provide the girls with dowries to marry men of their status, wanted all three to go into the convent so he could harbor his resources and give them to his single son. She refused. The other two girls did go. So she always visited them and treated the nuns very kindly. As a matter of fact, she built 250 small houses in a principality, San Martino, and she gave them to poor girls to use as dowries so they could marry well and not have to go into a convent or into prostitution.
So while we might laugh at her taking the Vatican treasury home in the sedan chair, she was putting the money to good use, it would seem.
In some cases, she was. And she was very greedy, and she was very bossy. And she's a fascinating and complex woman for that time and place.
We won't tell the end of her story just yet, because I want to talk a little bit about the Velázquez painting as well. How did it even come about that he got to make, or was he commissioned to make this portrait?
It was his second trip to Rome in 1650, and he painted Pope Innocent. It's a very famous, beautiful picture of him looking rather grim in his papal robes on his throne. And at the same time, he whipped a portrait up of Donna Olympia, which was lost in 1724, and just last year it popped up again.
I'm wondering, though, given the power that she had at the time when Pope Innocent was the Pope, did she say, look, you can come and get the Vatican commission to paint the Pope, but you're going to have to paint me at the same time?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Because who would have commissioned him to do that? Or, you know, would it be usual for somebody like Velázquez perhaps to see her and think, no, I want to paint this woman?
I can't imagine he would have said that had he seen her. You know, she was 60 at the time. She made no effort with her appearance, which I think is a wonderful thing. She did not trade her sexuality and her femininity ever. She, as soon as her husband died, the Pope's brother, she put on this ugly black widow's weeds outfit with the veil coming over her forehead, and she wore that the rest of her life. I think she must have insisted, or she got the Pope to insist, since the Pope did everything Donna Olympia told him, to, you know, while he was there. Why doesn't he do a portrait of her as well?
And how did Velázquez portray her? Was it warts and all?
Yes, even though she did not have warts, she was...
I mean metaphorically, obviously.
Yes, metaphorically, I think so. She had a full jowly face at that point. She had very cunning, dark eyes. She was apparently very attractive in her youth, but as she grew older, she really didn't care.
Now, this painting that was lost, this is the kind of the Hollywood part of the story, isn't it? It was lost and then it reappears in the 1980s, and somebody buys it probably for a couple of bob, you know, not for a lot of money.
Yeah.
What happened? Who found it, and when did they suddenly discover, jeepers, that thing I paid 50 quid for is worth a bit more than that.
It's like the first chapter of a Dan Brown novel.
There's a
right?
touch of that, all right, isn't there?
did. So it's my understanding, you know, it was passed down. Her son was a cardinal for a time before he married. Anyway, it went into a cardinal's family. I think it was her grandson was a cardinal. Mm. And it was lost in 1724. That was the year it was listed as being in the estate of a deceased cardinal. And so it's gone. And it wasn't signed or anything. So in the 1980s, someone in Amsterdam had this solemn portrait hanging on the wall and took it to Sotheby's in Amsterdam and said, you know, what is this thing? And they said, well, it's the 17th century Dutch school. They didn't know. So they sold it at auction, and the person who has it now took it to Sotheby's last year, and they took the panel off the back of it, you see. And on the canvas, there was a kind of sign, a cipher, which showed it belonged to this particular cardinal's collection. Hmm. And then they knew exactly that's the lost Velasquez.
And did this owner have any idea? Was there some kind of inkling that there's more to this than meets the eye? This isn't just some lost Amsterdam school painting. There's a lot more to it.
I don't know, because I haven't talked to the person who has it up for sale.
He or she has probably been very quiet, I would guess.
It's a great story. I mean, you know, a painting from the 17th century, anonymous artist, anonymous subject, maybe you could get $5,000 for it, $10,000, not more than that. You know, I have some of these things hanging on my wall, which I now want to take to Sotheby's and have them have a better look at. So this is basically 2 or 3 million pounds for free, you know, a surprise, like you win the lotto.
Well, we'll see what it fetches at auction. I said I didn't want to tell the end of Donna Olympia's story, because unfortunately, given all the colour and bravery in some ways, but corruption as well, but given all of that, all of those aspects of her, the earlier and middle part of her life, the end was a sad, sorry tale.
Well, it was, because when the Pope died, after she had stolen the entire Vatican treasury, she did not buy him a coffin, and it was customary at the time for the families of the Pope, since they had stolen so much from the Vatican, to at least give the old guy a decent burial. And so when the cardinals came to her and said, Donna Olympia, where's the coffin? You know, the body's beginning to smell. She said, I'm just a poor widow. So they didn't know what to do with them. So they took the body and they shoved it into a janitor's closet, where the rats started to eat it. And mm-hmm. finally, someone who worked in the Vatican felt so bad, he bought him a cheap casket and buried him. And the new Pope, Alexander VII, had been Innocent Secretary of State and really hated Donna Olympia. He was a very incorrupt public official, and he launched an investigation into all of her embezzlement and corruption and theft of the treasury, and it looked like she was going to go to jail and lose everything. And then the bubonic plague breaks out, and in some places in Italy, half the people die. So she thought she was safe in her country palace, but she got it. And all her servants ran off, and she ended up dying. And there are some reports that when her son came to get the body and lifted it off the bed, that her head turned and these huge diamonds fell out of her mouth, that she was afraid if she fell into a coma that her servants would steal them. And she knew they wouldn't put their hands in the mouth of a bubonic plague victim. So she hoped she would wake up and still have her diamonds in her mouth. It's a very strange story.
You've been reading way too much Dan Brown, Eleanor. Listen, it's a magnificent story. I presume you'll be part of the bidding tomorrow night. I hope you have your 2 million on ready to, or 3 million ready to stick out of the bank account in case you get there. That's the that's Eleanor. Eleanor speaking to me there about the Sotheby's. Eleanor Herman speaking to me about the Sotheby's Old Masters evening sale. It takes place tomorrow evening, July the 3rd, from 7 p.m. I believe it's going to be live streamed, actually, from the Sotheby's website, if you are so inclined and you have a few bob in the bank that you want to spend. Things from the 14th and to the 19th century by artists including Turner, Constable, Johann Liss, and, as we've heard, Velasquez. Full details can be found on Sotheby's.com, and you'll also read Eleanor Herman's extended article on the Velasquez painting of Donna Olympia if you go to that website.